for the communities. Good morning and welcome to this two-hour Main Street Radio special from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm Rachel Reby. Today we're going to talk about aging. A landmark study on a group of Catholic nuns is changing the way we view old age. The 15-year study involving almost 700 nuns has yielded significant information about what can be done to prevent Alzheimer's disease and how to live active, productive lives well into old age. We'll meet some of the nuns who are participating in the project and talk to the doctor who's directing the study. But first, let's talk about the retirement years. A generation ago, retirement was a relatively short period of time between work and death. That's not true anymore. Retirement might be 20 or even 30 years long. Today's retirees are healthier, wealthier, and younger than ever before. They're looking for new adventures and new challenges. We're broadcasting today from the fairgrounds in Sioux Falls, where a Silver City of Airstream trailers has sprung up. We're set up outside the tent, a cement block building that serves as social headquarters for this group. As many as 4,000 people are expected for the annual gathering of the Wally Byam Caravan Club, a group of mostly senior citizens who are spending part of their golden years in Airstream recreational vehicles. NPR's Kara Hetland asked some of them how their retirement is different than their parents.
Well, I think really we're able to travel. When my parents were in this category, they were on the farm, and they felt like they were not able to go and do things. And I just feel that we're more free to do what we want to.
Travel is the whole thing, and the health is important. I think our health is better now than what it was for our folks, although they didn't go to the doctors because they weren't sick. But a lot of times maybe they weren't feeling so good, they didn't do anything about it, and would maybe would still be here today if they would have got the care that we have today. But this is a neat era. I think this is really, we're very fortunate. Whether our kids will have this, I don't know. I hope they do. My kids seem like they're too busy to do any traveling.
My parents couldn't afford to travel. No, they were on a farm. It was touch and go and everything, and they just didn't have the money or anything to get out and go. They were lucky to get out of the state.
No, much more active lifestyle. Yep, get to see the world and enjoy everything.
No, my parents always talked about going places, but they were rather conservative, and they just didn't go to all those places, and we've decided we're going and enjoy things, and we keep going every year. We probably travel 10 or 12,000 miles per year.
Great.
And enjoy every bit of it.
My parents were, they didn't travel a whole lot. They lived in Central Valley of California. My father was a farmer, and he had things he had to do.
We lived about 60 miles from Yosemite National Park, and after we got married, we took them there for the first time.
We lived through the Depression years out there, and that was really hard on everybody.
I would say there's less difference between us and our parents than there are between us and our children. Our children don't join things like this much. I think any organization you belong to is the same way. Our club and the Masons and I suppose the Knights of Columbus and everybody else are going down the drain. People just don't join and participate and become officers and all of that. I think there's a big difference between us and the younger generation.
I'm Rachel Reby. This is a special Main Street broadcast from the fairgrounds in Sioux Falls. Our guests this morning are Dr. David Brechtelsbauer, Associate Director for the Sioux Falls Family Practice Residency, and Marilyn Moore, a registered nurse who manages Prestige Plus, a program for almost 9,000 senior citizens. Good morning to both of you. Welcome to Main Street. Listeners, our phone lines are open for your questions and comments today. If you're in the Twin Cities, you can call us at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you are outside the metro area, call us at 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Dr. Brechtelsbauer, is today's older generation really younger, or do they just act that way?
One of the things we try to teach about aging is that age has very little to do with it, and indeed how you feel the good luck and good preventive medicine for health. There are 90-year-olds who are young and healthy, and there are 70-year-olds who are unhealthy and seem much older. So you can't judge much from chronological age.
So is it their mental condition or their physical condition that plays a bigger part in how old they think they are, do you think?
I'd say it's probably six of one and a half dozen of the other. It's both critically important.
Marilyn, how do you feel about that? You work with a lot of senior citizens, and you must see a wide continuum.
Well, one of the things I've noticed is that attitude is extremely important, that if they feel young, they will act young. And like Dr. Brechtelsbauer said, their age really has nothing to do with it. I've seen 90-year-olds who've ridden roller coasters. It's just their attitude and how they view life, I think, that they have a positive outlook, very much more positive than those people who are just sitting home vegetating and they're negative about everything.
And is that part of the trick to get people to think that they can do things? How do you empower seniors to get them to think, boy, there's a big life left out there for you. Don't shut down this early. And certainly maybe their parents felt that way. The whole word retirement, to withdraw, to kind of close down, to shut down. It's a different world today, isn't it?
I think it was mentioned early on in the clip that retirement is actually a long time now. And if you're going to spend 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 years doing this, it's worth investing some effort to enjoy doing it and have that time to make the best of it. So I think part of that is just pointing out longevity. I always tell my medical students that they seem to have some bias against elderly patients, that these people's life expectancy is longer than you've been on Earth so far. So you might invest a little more time in them. They're still going to have some time left to be worth focusing some attention on. So I would say part of it is just the duration of retirement and the duration of that healthy period when you can travel and so on. Part of it is a psychological battle in terms of most of the people that are active in retirement do have some diseases and illness. They have some arthritis, they have some vision problems, they have some hearing problems. But to have the energy and ambition or attitude to not let that get you down and be active anyway is an effort, but an effort well worth taking.
Our phone number is 651-227-6000 if you're in the Twin Cities. If you're outside the metro area, please call us at 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. And we are interested in how you view retirement, how it's playing out in your life, what you would like your retirement to be like, or how you have seen your parents' retirement come about. So if you'd like to call us today, we would love to hear your comments, 1-800-242-2828. David, you told me that you often ask your patients if they feel old or how old they feel.
I think that question is a window to the attitude and how people feel, and it also allows me to show students who think students think if you're maybe 60, you're really old. One, to point out how the chronological age is, but then whether they feel old. And most of my patients, 60, 70, 80, 90, will pause only briefly and say, no, I don't feel old. Usually when I ask them, well, what would it take to make you feel old, it is some reflection of loss of function. If I couldn't drive my car anymore, I think I would feel old. Or some other activity that if they couldn't do that, that's what makes aging in the person's mind more significant, when you have some limitations in what you can do.
NPR's Kara Hetland is with us here on the fairgrounds in Sioux Falls. Kara, you're with a member of our audience.
I am. Rachel, this is Ray, and he has a question for our panel.
How much do you think genes have to do with it? Now, my mom is 94. Her mother was 99 when she died, and my dad's mother was 99 when she died. So I think genes really have a lot to do with your aging process. And I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think you were very wise in picking your parents and grandparents.
Yeah,
there's huge genetic factors that are important and for the most part not modifiable. So you're either lucky or you're not. But even if you have a bad genetic background, I think there's things you can do to preserve both your mental and physical function in terms of prevention, involving exercise, not smoking, not abusing drugs, keeping that positive attitude Marilyn talks about, So if somebody's out there whose parents died at age 60, I don't want you to get discouraged. But you can be thankful, Ray, that you picked out the ones that lived into their 90s.
Ray, what do you do to keep active?
I do anything I want to do. I mean, really, let's face it. When you retire, that's what you do. We sold the farm, moved to Florida. And in Florida, I play golf at least once a day, every day. And I finally got my wife interested, and she's playing now every day. So it's what you make it. You can either go home, sit and watch TV, or you can get out and do what you want to do.
Thank you, Ray. We go to the phones now. We have Jim from Big Fork standing by. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to Main Street.
Hello. Say, I'm actually up here at my lake home. I'm 55 years old and a senior baby boomer and facing retirement. And the thing I'm wondering about is I've spent many years with the identity of being a business person. If I retire, I don't know what I'd be. And I'm just wondering if I have a identity crisis to look forward to.
Marilyn, does that happen sometime? We are our jobs for so many decades of our life. How do you make that switch into I am not this category anymore?
Well, I think he needs to start planning now. I've seen some people, particularly farmers, because I come from a rural background, and those people didn't have very good hobbies as they were in their career period. And I think that that's important to start some hobbies now. It might be golfing, it might be rollerblading, who knows what it is, but something to get into that realm of some other activity besides work. And often we don't think we have time for that, but I really think it's important. I think that people need to get themselves ready for those years. The other thing that I've noticed is that people really have, they need to keep a sense of purpose in their lives. When they quit work, that's our purpose. Our career is our purpose. And if we don't continue to have some kind of purpose, then it's easy to become old and sit and do nothing. So there's lots of activities that people can enter into that you can use your skills from your career, like volunteer activities, which I have volunteers in my office at Avera McKinnon, and they have wonderful skills that we can take advantage of, and they feel pride in being able to offer that.
David, what would you have to add to that?
I would agree. I think the caller will learn to say that I'm retired, but soon they'll learn to say that and I travel every winter to Florida, or I volunteer at the meal site, or I do whatever I do, go see the grandkids. And I think in the same sense we tell students that their role as a student is important in and of itself, not just as a way to get to graduation or someplace else. Retirement isn't just sitting around waiting to die. It's doing things and being active. And very much the experience of this generation can be important to all of us.
Our number 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, or if you're outside the Twin Cities, call us at 1-800-242-2828. Tell us about your feelings about retirement. Is that something you look forward to, or do you find that sort of frightening? We go back to our audience now, and Kara Hetland.
Rachel, I'm with Carol, who has some advice for people who are about ready to retire.
We bought an Airstream when the kids were little and Craig was still working. We were looking forward to retirement. We didn't only retire from the school system. We retired to Airstreaming full time. That's a good idea. Have something to look forward to when you retire.
So you need to move from point A to point B. Is it the scary part just moving into a place that you don't have any idea what you'll be doing?
We just move. If we don't like where we are, we'll go move someplace else.
And apparently there are a lot of people who agree with you, Carol, because
yes,
you're going to have
are.
4,000 Airstreamers here by next week. What kind of a lifestyle is that for you?
We just keep on the go, and we see people in California that we see in Idaho, that we see in Maryland, that we see in Florida. We keep seeing the same people all the time. It's a big extended family in this club, and we retire to do this. We still have a house, which we lovingly call our four-bedroom colonial storage shed. a lot of people have given up their homes, and they just are on the road continuously.
And I see from the information in the sign-up sheets in the tent that this is not just purely socializing. I saw sign-up for blood bank donations. So you get together and you do things for other people as well, don't you?
The Bloodmobile was here yesterday. They have manicures and pet visits to a nursing home scheduled. Our ladies have been knitting and crocheting caps that we will leave here in Sioux Falls because it does get cold here. And we've been saving the pop top, the little metal tops from the soda cans all year long. We save those up and we have groups get together and put them in great big gallon containers and they bring them all up here. They're on display at the convention center. Ronald McDonald House benefits from those. The town benefits from all the other things. Plus, our offerings from our church service help local people. And pennies that the kids collect help a local citizen. A
lot of things going on.
Yes.
Thanks, Carol. David, do you feel that people need to do something in retirement instead of just pursue social activities instead of just, is an important component for this group of retirees that they help other people in some way?
I don't know that that's universally true, but it certainly is often true that if people can have some sense of contribution, now that, you know, contributing to the care of the grandchildren occasionally or whatever, it doesn't have to necessarily be a job for pay, although it might be. It doesn't have to be an official job, volunteer job, although it might be, and those opportunities certainly exist. But some sense that you're still contributing to the community, and I think it was illustrated well in Clarel's comments, I think is important in terms of sense of self-esteem and still feeling like a valuable part of the community.
You agree with that, Mel? You're shaking your head.
I agree very much, very much so. I think that people feel like they need to give back to society. When we're in our younger years, we kind of take a lot from society and from our communities. We don't have time to give back. And so as people retire and have more time, they feel a real sense of purpose and value for themselves by giving back to society, by giving back to their communities.
Our phone number, 651-227-6000, in Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. If you are outside the metro area, will you call us at 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. And we go to the phones now. Colleen is standing by from New Hope. Good morning, Colleen. Welcome to Main Street.
Good morning. Having been a recent true employee of Avera McKinnon, I really appreciate what they do for senior citizens in the community, and I am aware of Dr. Brechtelsbauer as well. But I think the key is we make plans in our life, whether we are in high school looking forward to the future, what we're going to do. Each stage, you know, you decide when you're going to have children, well, most of us do, and what we're going to do with our careers. And I think that the key is to look at retirement as another step in our life and to start planning ahead, looking at what your goals and desires might be.
And Colleen, how has that played out for you? What have you got in mind for retirement?
Well, for retirement, first of all, you have to look at the financial aspect. You have to have been planning ahead for that, first of all. And then look at what your interests are. And if you are still fortunate enough to have a spouse living, you have to kind of collaborate your plans together, look at what it is you'd like to do. And quite honestly, we have just purchased our first water home, and we're experimenting a little on our weekends off. We just moved to the Twin City area and have family in South Dakota and Tennessee, and so we're going to see if this is something that we might like to do, to travel and see new things.
And so you're sort of experimenting before you actually get to that point of retirement.
That's correct.
Is that a good idea, Marilyn, do you think, to try it out, to have some plans in place?
Yes, I think that's a wonderful idea. I think she's come up with a very good plan for the future. It's like she mentioned, you know, we go through life phases, and this is just another phase of life, and we really do need to plan for it. This is I think she's brought up a really good suggestion.
I think it's interesting that the age of retirement, people are not just acting younger, they actually are younger, that the retirement age continues to drop. In 1950, the average retirement age was almost 69 years old. By the late 80s, it was just under 64 years old, and that downward trend is expected to continue. Researchers predict by the year 2005, the average age of retirement will be 61 years old. How significant is that, David?
I think with the younger age, you have a less prevalence of chronic disease and things that interfere with function. So people will be more in activities that traditionally we don't associate with retirement, hang gliding or whatever. So we have younger, vibrant people still physically able to take on some of those kind of challenges. And then there's going to be a longer duration of retirement, so planning for that becomes even more important.
The woman we talked to, Colleen, talked about finances. In fact, it was one of the first things she mentioned is the finances have to be a part of it. Does that play a critical part in making plans, Marilyn? Do you hear the people who are approaching retirement? Is it a lot of talk about how they're going to fund it?
Yes, I hear that a lot in the 50-year-olds. You know, they're saying things like, well, I need to, you know, get my finances in order here. Am I going to have enough money to retire? And they often go to financial planners to figure that out. Well, I have several friends who decided to retire when they were around 55, and they've decided that they're going to, if they overuse their finances and they're still well, they'll go back to work when they're 65, which is kind of interesting because they're vital and they're able to do some fun things now, and it's just a different outlook.
We go to the phones. Hector is online from Elk River. Good morning, Hector. Welcome to Main Street.
Good morning. Yeah, I've seen all my life all folks going to retire to Mexico. I'm always wondering what they do when they just get sick. Do they use their American medical insurance to pay the medical providers down in Mexico, or what do they do?
That's an interesting question. When we see people retire to different countries, then what do they do about their medical care? David, any ideas about that?
I'm not sure I exactly know the answer, but I think getting Medicare payment for overseas services is nigh on to impossible. So if you're going to retire overseas, which I think I heard on NPR once, those people are going to Thailand and other exotic places, making provisions for health care, not counting on your Medicare insurance, is one of those requirements as part of that financial mm-hmm. planning.
Jan in Montevideo, good morning. Welcome to Main Street.
My comment is the affluence of our senior citizens, of which I am one, and of which I am not poorly off, has taken us away from our grandkids. I don't do a lot of traveling, but I do attend all kinds of school functions, and I have become grandmother to a lot of children who grandparents are on the road or in Florida or Texas or Arizona, and these kids are suffering. These grandkids are suffering because grandma and grandpa are never there for them, and I think it's a lot of trouble with our young people now. The grandparents in my life were a big influence, and I will hang up and see what they have to say about this. Thank you.
I'd like to hear a comment from our audience, some of the people who are traveling as senior citizens. Kara, do you have somebody who might want to respond to, how about the grandkids?
Bob, do you have grandkids?
Yes.
Okay.
What we're doing is we're using the email, and we can send pictures over the email and receive pictures back, and then we have, of course, the cell phone. We are full-time for about 2.5 years now, and we don't have any problems. And once in a while, we coming back to Southern California where the kids are. Well, once in a while, that's like 8 months or in 8 or 9 months, and we will be back. But we don't have any problem with that.
And Bob, if they ever just said to you, why don't you stay home and act like grandpa?
No, this country is very, very large, and just the lower 48 states, if you spend just 1 month in one state, that's 4 years of traveling. And with the Airstream organization, you can take on caravans. And so we went to Panama this year for 10 weeks, and we came back, of course, and now we are at the valley, and from the valley we can take another caravan to the polar bears or northwest.
Would you resent the statement, you're a grandfather, now stay home and go to the school activities of your grandkids?
No, my own kids take care of the kids. You know, we took care of them. And now the kids will take care of their kids, you know.
Now, that's a popular sentiment here.
this morning. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, but Rachel, I want to know how many people have their grandkids come and visit them in their Airstream camper. Hands are going up. They're flying out here for this convention.
Let's talk to somebody, Kara, who has grandkids either coming or who have come.
Okay, this is Dawn.
Hi, I have 6 grandkids, and they're all in, 4 of them are in California and 2 in Denver, so we're kind of torn. We're gone about 6-7 months out of the year. Two of the grandchildren live in Denver, so I get tugged at from my daughter in Denver to come back to Denver more often. The 2 sons in California, why are you gone so much, Dad? Because the grandsons are growing up on you. But what my wife and I do, we decided we travel with them a lot. The 2 grandsons, when we leave here, we're going to Denver, we're picking them up, and we're going to spend the rest of the summer with those 2 grandsons. When I get home, then we're going to pick up the other 2 grandsons, and we're going to tour around for a month or so until we get them into school. So that's kind of how we deal with it, but it is difficult. You have to understand that when children are little, they tend to look up to their grandparents, at least that's my opinion, and I found that I only had 1 grandparent, so to speak, so I really missed out on that. So I want to make sure, as my grandkids grow up, that they have that opportunity to have a grandfather and a grandmother to refer back to later on in life.
And Don, is it difficult to balance your desire to have an active, productive retirement? Here you are on your bicycle with your bicycle helmet, obviously very active. Does that kind of sometimes wage war with I need to be there for them?
Yeah, a little bit. I was pretty fortunate. I retired relatively young. I was 54 when I retired, and I'm fully retired. I don't work. But I find that, it is somewhat difficult, but we're going to make it. And I think if I get the grandkids involved, then later on I'll get the kids involved. And already one son and his wife, we went on an Airstream venture for a few days. So, it just takes time, but we'll work them in. We'll get it done.
You'll get the whole family Airstreaming eventually. You're listening to a special Main Street broadcast from Sioux Falls. Our guests are Marilyn Moore, a registered nurse who manages Prestige Plus, and Dr. David Brechtelsbauer, associate director for the Sioux Falls Family Practice Residency. We invite you to visit the Main Street website to hear this broadcast and our series of stories on aging. Go to MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. We'll be back with more of Main Street after this.
Minnesota Public Radio's Main Street Radio coverage is supported by the Blandon Foundation, celebrating 60 years of dedication to strengthening rural Minnesota communities.
75% of inmates on federal death row are black or Hispanic, but Attorney General John Ashcroft says that's no reason to halt the executions.
There's no evidence of any racial or ethnic bias in the Justice Department's decision-making process in federal death penalty cases.
I'm Steve Inskeep. The federal death penalty. That's the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's today at 1 p.m. here on Minnesota Public Radio. Today's programming is sponsored in part by Ruth Hanold, in memory of her husband, Terrence Hanold, on their wedding anniversary. Now, here's the latest news from the NPR newsroom and Greta Cunningham.
Thanks, Rachel, and good morning. The man who was accused of opening fire outside the White House in February has entered a guilty plea. Robert Pickett pleaded guilty today to assault on a federal officer and to violating federal and local weapons laws. He's accused of firing 2 rounds outside the White House grounds on February 7th. Pickett is from Indiana and is a former Internal Revenue Service auditor. He has a 15-year history of mental illness. Democrats will have their newfound Senate power tested as lawmakers turn their attention to patients' rights. Senate and Democrats are offering a bill that gives patients broader powers to sue their health plans. The GOP version doesn't go as far as the Democratic measure. A U.S. House hearing on Ford vehicles and Firestone tires has opened with an attack on the federal agency overseeing the problems. The chair of the House Subcommittee on Consumer Protection suggests the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is dragging its feet. Florida Republican Clifford Stearns says the agency is waiting until this summer to decide whether to open a formal investigation into the safety of Ford Explorers. Federal regulators and the chief executives of Ford and Firestone are scheduled to testify before the panel. In regional news, Wisconsin authorities now say 3 people have died and 14 others were injured when a twister touched down near Siren. 4 people remained hospitalized. At least 100 homes and businesses were destroyed or extensively damaged. Piles of lumber and debris are heaped where houses once stood. The village is getting help from at least 8 other counties as a second sweep of the community began around 9:30 this morning in an attempt to find anyone trapped or injured. Siren is about 70 miles northeast of Minneapolis. The forecast for Minnesota calls for partly cloudy skies and cooler temperatures statewide. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the north today, highs from 68 to 78 degrees. Right now in Duluth, it's clear and 61. Moorhead reports clear skies and 63. Worthington reports partly cloudy skies and 59. Sioux Falls reports clear skies and 61 degrees. And in the Twin Cities, partly cloudy skies with a temperature of 63. That's a look at the latest news.
Welcome back to our Main Street broadcast from Sioux Falls. I'm Rachel Reby. At 11, we're going to meet some of the Catholic nuns who are participating in a landmark study on aging, which has produced significant information about Alzheimer's disease. Almost 700 elderly sisters have agreed to undergo rigorous physical and mental testing every year and donate their brains for research after they die. But first, we're continuing our conversation on reinventing retirement. Our guests are Dr. David Brechtelsbauer, Associate Director for the Sioux Falls Family Practice Residency, and Marilyn Moore, registered nurse who manages Prestige Plus, a program for almost 9,000 senior citizens. Listeners, our phone lines are open for your questions and comments this morning. If you're in the Twin Cities, you can call us at 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. If you are outside the metro area, call us at 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. And we're very interested to get your take on retirement, either your own retirement, your upcoming retirement, or your parents' retirement. We are at the W.H. Lyon Fairgrounds in Sioux Falls, where hundreds of Airstream trailers have already gathered for the annual gathering of the Wally Byam Caravan Club. By next week, these grounds will be transformed into a silver city of Airstreams with a population of about 2,500 people, most of them senior citizens. Tom Tisdall is joining us. He and his wife spend 5 months a year living in their 39-foot Airstream trailer. Tom, is this what you thought retirement would be like?
Well, I think travel is probably the elite part of retirement, but it's also the people. And the people is what you relate to, I think, more than even travel. But it's unbelievable the things that you realize you've passed up in a lifetime as you're working and raising a family. And now as you travel on, say, my, we should have really taken our kids to see something like this. This is really great. And we're enjoying it, and they're going to have to work their way up to earn it to be able to see it. We didn't provide that for them, you might say. So I think the people is what helps keep you young, keeps you moving. And when I notice the people here that are yearly people we see every year, they don't age at all. They look the same every year that we see them, and I think that has a lot to do with our lifestyle.
Tom, you said you were encouraged to retire by a pair of heart attacks. Tell us about that. Did that just get you going quicker into retirement?
Oh, definitely got us going. Definitely, the doctor told me, he says, you got two choices. You can keep on working or maybe die, or you can retire and live. So it wasn't really hard to figure out what the answer to do in that. My first heart attack was in Norway, which was kind of interesting, is the fact that it's a socialized medicine place there, and I really didn't do too much to cure me. They saved me is what they really done. When I got back to America and a year later had the second heart attack there, then they got the problem fixed, and which was a little angioplasty thing, but worked out very well. So that's been around 7 years now, and we've sold the farmstead, sold all my businesses, and I tried to turn over to the kids, but it was hazardous to their health too, they decided, so they didn't continue on except for the farming part of it. And as everybody knows, the farming is not that great right now anyway, is the prices they got. The only business where you buy retail and sell wholesale. It's really get ahead.
And so what have you got planned for your retirement? What are the goals that you have for this next decade or two in your life?
Well, I think get more involved in the club. We've recently made a decision to get more involved in the WBCCI Club International, and we're going to work in a region area more diligent than we are. We still have been doing a lot of traveling to other organizations besides the WBCCI, and we'll probably eliminate some of those and spend more time with this here. It's the same people. We were working with the same people, but it was just a different organization, and like I say, I think it really revolves around people, and it's the people you associate, and even in our kids today, that's the people they associate today is how they get into trouble or they don't get into trouble, and I think that goes the same way with people when they retire. If they associate with eager-going people, they're going to be eager also and live longer, hopefully.
Was it hard to consolidate your life into a 39-foot trailer?
Well, no, I got to tell you, the truth offenders, we really still do have a home. We're not just living that. We're on vacation now in the summertime, and we live down in Fort Myers, Florida. We have a home down there on the Coosahatchee River. And the thing is that when we leave, they say, oh, you're going to go back north. I say, you understand, we're only going on vacation. We're just going to travel around this summer, and we'll be back again in end of September sometime.
And a tour of your 39-foot Airstream is available on our website. So if you want to see what that looks like, you can go to MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. Full range of seminars here. This isn't people just playing cards. They're bird watching seminars and financial planning seminars and line dancing seminars.
We do line dancing, and they do square dancing, and they do all kinds of the dances. And they also do, like you say, even the rock people that have things going that they're interested if they in the rock things and sit around together and compare notes and see where they found their really good things. There's a lot to do here. It's just not all travel. Mm-hmm. But it all kind of relates to the people and the idea of people with the same interest that you have.
And Airstreams have gotten so chic, so groovy. I read this week in the paper that Ralph Lauren has come up with a $150,000 Airstream, and you can have it decorated in four different ways. Mm-hmm. Adirondack, and I think North Woods was one of them, nautical, western, or utility surplus. I don't know why it would cost $150,000 to decorate it utility surplus, but so they've gotten very popular. So is it fun? Is it a camaraderie between the people in Airstreams?
Definitely it's a camaraderie. It is definitely that. I think it's a very good word to use, in fact, for the idea is that we all have somewhat the same interests. Yeah, well, they might be personal, but they still are the same goal, you might say, and I think that is a reach out and see what we missed in when we were working, I guess what it is there. It's a great way to go.
David.
Rachel, I think Tom said something very significant that illustrates what we're talking about when he said, I assume that's you and your wife, recently made a decision to get more involved. If you kind of wait for retirement to sneak up on you and you don't stop and evaluate and make those decisions, it will sneak up on you and you won't be doing anything. I think in this setting, we can't help talk about travel, but I think Margaret, maybe in Montevideo, made a decision to be a surrogate grandma and stay closer to home, and she's helping all those kids, and I think that's a good decision, too. But I think the important part is this is a real thing. It'll happen whether you prepare or not. Much better to make a decision and prepare. And different people have different priorities, make different decisions. That's fine.
We'll go to the phones now. We have Eddie from Onalaska, Wisconsin, holding on. Good morning, Eddie. Welcome to Main Street.
Well, good morning. Mine is just an extension of what the gentleman just said. My wife is not retired, but I am. And one of the things that we talked about this before we embarked on our decision, because we knew that once she retired, we were going to be doing more of this than we are now. But throughout our married life, we've always done things together. And one of the things that I'm aware of in many families that the husband may have one hobby which takes him out of the home, hunting, fishing, whatever, and her hobby may be something else. And maybe the two of them, they should sit down together and maybe find out if they're going to be compatible traveling together 3 or 4 or 5 months a year, or what their retirement should be. Maybe it should be, like the lady who stays home and does her things with her grandchildren, and he can continue to hunt and fish or whatever he does. My wife and I have decided to start breeding. We breed and show pedigree cats, and so we travel around the country showing our cats, and then we have raised kittens at home and sell our kittens. So that's our hobby. We have friends all over the country, and in fact, via email, we have friends all over the world.
And so is that important, Marilyn? Do you think that this shared passion, that you look at retirement as a chance to indulge more time in it, whatever that is?
I think that's true. I think it is important to have something that you want to do together, but at the same time, not give up those things that we like to do individually, because we can grow in all ways, and we can grow together, or we can grow individually. And one of the things that I noticed and that Tom brought out is that, you know, this isn't just the camaraderie. I think there's a lot of potential here for growth. And one of the things I see in older folks as they get, as they age, is that they stay mentally alert and they try to get themselves involved in activities where they can learn something. That always adds greater interest in their lives and really stimulates themselves. So I see that as being part of retirement, is the ability to grow in many, many ways. It might be a sport, it might be an interest, it might be something that we don't just stay stagnant, but that we're able to learn new things. And I see that lifelong learning is extremely important in retirement.
So people learning to play piano when they're 70 years old, or learning
organ,
a foreign language or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do they need encouragement for that? Do they think, well, this is sort of silly?
Oh, I think so. You know, I think it's better to probably find people who are doing that to be mentors or something in that area. Certainly if you say to them, oh, you can't do that, then they won't feel like they're able to. But people are pretty much able to do anything they want to do as long as they set their minds to it.
We go to Cloquet now, where Brian is standing by. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to Main Street.
Good morning. I heard one person call and say that they raised their children so they didn't have a need to raise their grandchildren. My wife and I recently had twin grandchildren, and we retired to become professional grandparents.
Tell me what that life is like, Brian.
Well, we're really enjoying it. I worked shift all my working life, and it was just challenging trying to find time for the children, because they'd have a concert at night and I'd be working afternoons or something in that order, or worked weekends all the time, and we just wanted to be with them. And we've been living in about a week out of the month in Cloquet, and then they're about 4.5 hours away, so we live about 3 weeks up there, and we've just been having a great time. The grandkids are great friends of ours, and as our daughter-in-law and our son, we're pretty much best friends now, and it's a unique relationship, and we're really enjoying it.
And do you expect that will be most of your retirement, Brian, or do you have plans when the kids get a little bit older to do something else? Or is this good? Is this a good choice?
We plan on doing a lot of traveling. We have been doing some already, and this summer we're going to move our other son and his wife to Oregon, and we got a lot of travel plans, but we plan on being around for our children, and we've been fortunate enough that we've been able to retire early, and it's just been a great joy being around for them. I don't know how I ever had time to work.
That's a great attitude. Thank you for your call. Our phone number, 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities. If you're outside the metro area, call us at 1-800-242-2828. And we are broadcasting at the fairgrounds in Sioux Falls. We are here under a blue sky. It was very warm in Sioux Falls yesterday, but it has cooled off here and is just very pleasant. And we have a group of people from the Airstream Convention that have brought their own chairs for the most part and joined us here. Tom, I guess that's one of the Airstream things. I couldn't get a cup of coffee this morning without a cup.
You always have your cup of coffee and a chair wherever you go to visit somebody, because they always have the coffee, but they're always short on chairs. You know, it's not just a tradition.
It's bring your own everything. And we have Kara Hetland in the audience with us.
Rachel, I have Ray with me, and he wants to talk a little bit about his idea of what being a grandparent is like, especially a grandparent on the go.
I didn't retire, and our children know this. I didn't retire, or my wife didn't retire. We retired to retire, not to be parents to our grandchildren. They have parents. Now, we appreciate our grandchildren and all this, and we see them a couple weeks a year. They come stay with us. We stay with them. But I'm not a professional babysitter, and I see so many grandparents anymore that where the children do what they want to do, and they're babysitting, and they can't travel because they got to babysit. And I think this is entirely wrong. And that's about what I got to say about it. But I get so tired of, in Florida, we have people there that's raising their grandchildren. I think this is wrong. They have parents.
We'll go to the phones. Linda in Big Lake standing by. Good morning. Welcome to Main Street.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm from Big Lake, Minnesota. My husband and I recently retired. He is 55 years old, and I'm 52. And we just bought a fifth wheel right now and a new truck, and we're planning on going on the road. And we are grandparents of six grandchildren, and they spend a great deal of time with us because we feel that's important. A lot of kids don't have grandparents. We think that's a very vital part of anybody's life is your grandchildren, because part of your legacy is through them. We are also professional people. My husband was a firefighter for 30 years, and I was a therapist. I worked with the mentally ill for 21 years. So we figure we have given a lot to society, and now it's our time.
And Linda, you said you're 52 years old and you're retiring. Is that much younger than your parents retired?
Oh, of course. I was raised at a farm in western Minnesota, and my father was 65 and very healthy up until recently. And they worked their whole lives. You know, my father and mother said, never marry a farmer because you're going to be working all the time, and I didn't. But I don't know. It's a very difficult life, and I think I listened to my folks and said, you know, there's another life out there. I don't want to work so hard the rest of my life. And, yes, we have worked hard, but we've also planned for our retirement, and I think that's what a lot of people our age sometimes have neglected to do.
Let me ask you about that, Linda, because one of the points that was made earlier in the program was when you start thinking retirement, finances is the next thing you're thinking about. Did you and your husband make the decision years ago that you wanted to retire in your 50s?
Absolutely, because my husband's a firefighter, and they can retire when they're 55, and he had 30 years, and so we were very fortunate that way. But we had planned on him retiring at 55, so what do we have to do to get there? And so we both took out our 401ks out of our jobs, and I was a late bloomer, so I didn't go to college till well after high school. And because that was another conscious decision to get a better job so we'd have more money in our retirement. And I just realized all of a sudden here it's here, and now we get to have some fun, and hopefully our health will hold out, which is always everyone's concern.
And how would you guys react to that thought about planning for retirement? Is that something that comes up a lot in your line of work, Marilyn?
Well, I guess I've seen that people really don't plan as well as they should. I think I'm seeing people who are in their early 60s and 65, and they're thinking, gee, I should have started doing something 10, 15, 20 years ago. So there's a group of people who are very good about planning for retirement financially and in other ways. And then there's another group that's kind of, I think, in denial and thinking that, you know, they're always going to be working and they're never really going to be retired. So I think we have two different groups here.
Well, and how do you plan for retirement? Tom, maybe you could address this since you're retired. If you don't know if you're planning for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, maybe after you had two heart attacks, you thought it'd be a relatively short period of time, and now it's stretching on and could be years and years and years that you have to plan for. How do you save up money when you don't know how much you're going to need?
Well, you're exactly right. I didn't plan on retiring at my when I did 56 years old, but I'll tell you that I was my own worst enemy as far as trying to do too many things. I had two businesses that I was running with a lot of people working underneath me, and I had a family that was, we all worked the farm without hiring any help. We did it in the night, and what that does for you, I figured I'd work till 65 before I retire, and what that does for you is that you do acquire assets, you might say, and so by eliminating some assets, that took care of my retirement, because I didn't have any money that I put away into the stock market to do that until after I started cutting back on the properties and stuff I had. But yes, that is good, and that's, you know, the people are a little bit smarter in that, and with the companies putting out money into the programs for them with some matching funds and that, it does help. But you know, you can get by an awful lot, do a lot in America without having a lot of money. You don't have to have a great big 39-foot motorhome in order to have fun. And it's just something that you do after you kind of get into it. You kind of say, well, I can have something better. It's kind of like boating or whatever. They got to have a little bit bigger boat. And but you can travel the country and do it economically with what you can afford and still have fun and as much fun as anybody else does.
Let's talk about this concept of moving into a second career at retirement. We have talked very much this morning about how you spend those years, new challenges, volunteering, spending time with your grandkids. An increasing number of people who are retiring are only retiring from their present career. They are looking for something new. Do you see that in your practice, David?
Yeah, we'll do pre-employment physicals on 55 and 60-year-olds who are seeking new job or have a new job and are getting clearance. I think people are looking for just variety, new opportunity, something they thought they couldn't do and now decided they can. So it's part of that decision-making and what you choose to invest your energy and intellect into.
Do you think that most people are going into a second career because they need to supplement their retirement or because they have anxiety about a blank piece of paper for their future? Or is it a chance to try something they always wanted to do but weren't able to do?
I think most of the people I talk to have just discovered a new interest that they didn't have a chance to do before, and now they do. Sometimes that interest is created by some financial independence from the first job, the work you did to get to that point, and now you can do what you wanted to do and never thought you could because the financial independence is there, and if you make some income, that's good, but it's not the most important part.
A study that I read said that retirees who are moving into a second career are looking for a chance to make a difference, and they also want to escape the career stress. Does that sound right with the people that you talk to?
My experience would corroborate that study.
And Tom, is that what you hear too from your fellow retirees?
Well, you know, I got to even have to admit while we're sitting here that I did go back and do a little part-time work last winter. I'm just a whim, and I didn't really intend to do that. It worked into more than what I really figured on, but it was selling, and the guy had an Airstream trailer out there for sale, and I thought maybe I could get a job, part-time job, just doing a little sales thing there, and it escalated into a lot more hours than I had figured on there. But you know, when I got ready to leave, they threw me a big party even. They had cake and everything on there, so hope I come back again, and it makes you kind of feel kind of good, because I'm trying not to take any money away from the people that are trying to live off that business. I would just kind of fooling around with something to do, and accidentally some money come my way besides, you know. So I find that I put the check in the account, it goes right out, so there's no problem.
We'll take one more call from Polly in Alexandria. Good morning, Polly.
Sitting here listening to the people talking about the different ways they retire and when they retire and so on. We were able to retire, fortunately, when we were 55. And we have a lot of friends that are working and working and working and working long past the time that they really needed to because they're afraid to retire. And I guess one of my comments is, I think when you retire, you need to do the things you want to do and do it now. People put things off and they, someday I'm going to do this and someday I'm going to do that. It doesn't happen. And pretty soon you find out that you're unable to do it. But you don't, and I agree with